we'd like to welcome you to the Heart Leader Podcast, where heart and mind align. I'm your host, Amber, and I'm here with co-host Austin, and we'd like to know, do you have a passion to make a greater global impact? Are you ready to embrace leading with heart and love? If so, join us on this journey to become heart leaders who change the world. Each episode brings heart-centered connection, building stronger relationships, communities, and businesses. Let's take a deeper dive into what it means to be heart leaders. The Heart Leader Podcast starts now. Hello, wonderful Heart Leader community. This is Amber Mikesell, and I am here with our guest for today, Bob Yule. Bob is the co-founder of Bar S Foods, and he is a wonderful representation of what it means to be a heart leader, not only in business, which he has amazing stories that he's going to share with us about, but also in the community as he gives back regularly, and also within the family, which I can personally attest to because I've had the honor of sharing within his family and really being part of everything that he does to take care of them. So he really is a great example of what it means to be a heart leader across life. So he's going to give us some examples and share his stories so that we can gain insights from all of his depth of knowledge and awareness. So first off, thank you for being here.
Well, Amber, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here on the inaugural podcast for Suivera and a Heart Leader program. So really excited to be part of that.
Well, having you here is an honor.
Yeah.
So I'd like to start out, since our theme for this month is all about gratitude and how gratitude can play a part in being successful in business and throughout life. Can you tell us a little bit about how that played a role in your business and really a little bit about Bar S?
Okay. Well, I have to go back a little further than that to start out. It kind of came from a couple of principles I've learned throughout my life. And I came from a relatively poor, certainly lower middle class family. But I had a very strong mother who had a lot of principles that she always taught me. And certainly one has stuck with me all these years, and it's led to a lot of my success, I believe, in my life. Whatever I have succeeded in, I have to attribute it to some of these principles. And her principle was the golden rule, that you do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And that embodies a tremendous amount of gratitude as well in that whole principle. But I've used that principle throughout my life, and certainly in my business life, and how I went about conducting myself in my business. The second principle, really a set of principles that I learned back in college at Ohio State University.
Go Bucks.
Go Bucks. And it came from Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And it was a psychology course I took. And I think that's the only thing I remembered out of the psychology course was this set of principles, which was a pyramid that started out with physiological needs of people, you know, air, water, food, moved up to safety, being safe and secure, love and belonging. Those are great needs that every human being has. Self-love, which was extremely important, and one that you and Heart Leader Program and Suivera, I know, espouses tremendously in reading your materials. And then lastly, self-actualization, and that is kind of doing what you're doing, is changing the world. In other words, really achieving your goals. So all those needs, a business as well as a relationship, needs to support those needs. And if it doesn't support those needs, you don't get the outcomes that you would expect. So those principles led into my business career, which I had a number of jobs before, but I ultimately wound up in a large food processing company that was owned by a New York conglomerate in Phoenix, Arizona. I was the division, and I came to this division to do a study and help improve the profitability of this division, which was a food processing business, a meat company. And during that process, which I spent about 4 or 5 years on with other managers, we decided that the company really didn't have a very good future. Oh, wow. And the main reasons were it was a very old company, over 100 years old, and it was it hadn't been, the reinvestment hadn't updated the old plants, and but mainly it was a cultural problem. The company was bound to a number of union contracts, and it, over the years, it had become a management versus labor problem. And so the productivity of the organization was very low. Morale was low. And so we gathered together as a subset of the management team and decided, what can we do about this? And we tried a number of things, but ultimately we decided that that the parent company should divest itself of this company. And we tried to sell it, but nobody would buy it. We couldn't get a buyer. And so we decided that it's kind of easier to be born than resurrected. And so we decided to start anew with a new company. So we would form a new company, buy the assets that we chose to buy from the parent company, and hire all new workers, at least new to this company workers, which would be non-union workers. And it doesn't mean that the people that work there, they could reapply, but they would have to reapply under these new conditions, this new, a new culture, so to speak, that we wanted to create in this company. And the company was called Bar S Foods. And so right from the get-go, well, on a Friday, we closed all the plants, one Friday in August 1981. And on Monday, we opened up and we started hiring over 2,000 workers to work. And we had a set of criteria that you, typical when you apply for a job, you don't see. We required, we wanted the new employees, quote, quote, new, but even though they were the old employees, some, many of them were, because many of them wanted to continue, even though they got a nice severance package from the parent company when we closed it, the old company. So the
just to make sure, you took great care of the former employees.
Oh, they were well taken care of, including benefits, and so they weren't upset. They wanted to work too. They got their severance, but they still wanted a job, and they were kind of excited about what we were trying to create, and so. We decided that when you come to work for a company, that there's a contract you have. It's not a written contract with fine print. It's an understanding about what you expect to receive and what we expect to receive. And we spent a lot of time before we started our hiring process of creating a set of commitments that we expected anybody that would come to work here would agree to these commitments, as well as to our mission and as to our pledge. So if you didn't do that, once you understood what they were, then you probably should go work someplace else. So we started out that way. And I think that created a tremendous culture right off the bat. And we also told the employees that we expected, we didn't expect them to do anything that we wouldn't do or receive anything that we didn't receive or not to receive something that we received. For example, many companies, the executives get a big bonus every year, which may not be the case for the employees. They don't get a bonus. That wasn't what Bar S was about. If we got a bonus, the employees got a bonus. And this gets back to my first principle, the golden rule, right? That's the way we would want to be treated. So everything we did, we tried to couch it. Well, how would we want to receive that? So the commitments, which I think was the backbone of Bar S, and ultimately the backbone of our success. Mm-hmm. And I'll just relate some of them.
That would be great.
I'm a team player with a positive attitude. I treat others with dignity and respect. I'm honest and I'm reliable, and so forth and so on. And there's 10 of them. These commitments are said in the form of self-talk, which my other partners and I, we read the book Self-Talk, and we decided that was something we wanted to do. And that was, if you're going to change something, you got to change what people think about themselves, right?
Yes.
And most of us grew up with all the negative self-talk. You can't do that. You got in trouble for this. So it's a lot of negative input. So we have to change that. So we decided these commitments would be positive, uplifting, and said as if you were already doing them.
I love that too.
Yeah, that was great.
Present moment.
And they're great. They're great commitments, all 10 of them. But we felt we have to go a step further. Okay. And it's kind of like what I was checking on your website, Suivera, your self-love course about the mirror technique.
Yeah.
When you recite these self-talk affirmations in front of a mirror. And we didn't really think about doing that, but what we did decide to do was, what would cement these beliefs, these commitments, the mission and the pledge. I will say the mission is to make Bar S the premier company in the processed meat industry. That was the mission. And I had friends of mine, other business people, that when I would tell them this, they'd say, well, what does premier mean? Whatever you want it to mean. But we've got over 2,000 ideas about what the employees think premier is, each individual one. So we have 2,000 iterations of what is premier. And that's far better than any definition I could give you. And that's what we went on. And but we decided that these commitments, the mission statement and the pledge, we would say to one another. And we did this by requiring a recitation every morning of the business day, every day. Every employee throughout the company across America, in every location, would recite the commitments, the mission, and the pledge. And they would do it in their teams. We were very team-oriented as a company. So they would gather in their team every morning, 8 o'clock or 7, whatever the work they started at that location. And they would say these to one another. So if you were in my team, and I had a team with my people that worked in my team, and we would stand outside our cubicles in our offices, and I would say to Amber, you know, I treat others with dignity and respect, as well as all these other commitments. And you would say to me. So it created a powerful bond over the years, in that if I didn't treat you with dignity and respect, not only did I know that I didn't do that, I know that you know I didn't do it, because we created this verbal contract and this bond with one another. It became so powerful that if for some reason I didn't tell the exact truth, and that was another course I gave the employees, is lying. What about lies? All kinds of lying. And if I didn't tell the truth, whether it wasn't actually lying, but omitting something that I know that you needed to know what was true, that was a break in that bond. I am not honest and reliable if I do that. So I would have to, I would apologize for that. And I would expect you, if you did it, because everybody makes those mistakes, to apologize to me. And I would try to atone for it. So this became pervasive throughout the company. And with all our workers, everybody subscribing to this culture and saying these affirmations to one another every day. I don't know any company that does this or didn't, but I believe it was one of the major reasons for our great success. And in fact, when we started out, most of our competitors thought we wouldn't last for 6 weeks. But in the end, we did become the premier company in the processed meat industry. We became the number one hot dog seller, manufacturer and seller in America. And we did that because, I believe, of these commitments and these beliefs that guided people's behavior culturally. We didn't have a set of, you know, a 16-book set of regulations and rules. We didn't have those. Never had those. All we had was these 10 commitments, and they served us well. It just worked. So I was real thrilled with that, and I believe that is part of being a heart leader, is to create these bonds between one another that guide our behavior, where it elevates the level of trust. Trust is so powerful in everything you do that if you don't trust somebody, if you don't trust your employer, are you going to do the best for that employer? No. So anyway, that was one of our major heart leader contributions, and it paid off so well. But it made us do a lot of other things that were beneficial to one another in this business entity.
I was going to say, it sounds like you offered courses too that taught life skills that were not only important within the business, but carried over into their everyday life as well. So again, part of being a heart leader is empowering, right?
Right.
So to take those principles that you had and then build classes, as you said, around what is truth and what does that include? And I know you had mentioned some others when we talked before. You constantly had, it's not as though that's directly related to creating the premier meat company and creating meats, but it was important in their behavior within the space that then contributed to creating.
I'll give you a couple examples of that. One is, you know, we can't have trust and mutual respect if we don't understand one another. When our company, mainly due to some of the locations we operated in, mainly Oklahoma, we had 6 plants in Oklahoma, mainly communications was extremely important. And we had over 50% of our workforce were Hispanic Americans. And many of them, English was a second language for them. So we decided that we would teach English. We actually became the largest English class in Oklahoma. And we encouraged all our workers, everybody, not just Hispanics, but we wanted everybody to come because you and I can use a lot more education in English. But anyway, we had these classes, and the workers would come after their work shift, you know, or on Saturday. We had Saturday classes too, and we invited them to bring their family members too. So, and that showed, I think, our employees that we really were interested in communicating with them and to learning more about them, and that paid off tremendously. And safety, you know, that's back to Maslow. If you don't feel safe in your organization, after all, a meat plant is a fairly risky place to work. You know, a lot of high speed equipment, slick floors, a lot of cleaning, and it's damp and it's slippery. And also you have a cold environment and it's strenuous work in many cases. So it's rife for accidents. So we decided that if we care about one another and we are committed to one another, that means we're committed to keeping each other safe. So we created a buddy system throughout our teams that anytime a situation might pop up that would cause an accident, or the employees know this better than anybody, what are the risky things, was to speak out, not just speak out, but to offer a suggestion of how to fix it. And any employee on the line, and we had lines as 100 feet long of these packaging lines, And they could stop the line at any time, any employee, even the person sweeping the scraps up from the floor. That person could walk up and push the stop button and stop the line because it's a safety hazard. And the whole plant would shut down. It was, and we would all jump on that problem. And with the employees, try to fix it right then and there. Not a suggestion in a suggestion box. By the time that reaches corporate headquarters, somebody could be hurt. So it was immediate. And they internalized this safety requirement. So we made another block of Maslow's hierarchy in that. And we did a number of other things. One of the reasons companies have unions and there's a disparity and lack of communications between management and workers is there's no place to grieve. Yes. We all need to grieve in our life, to tell people about our problems and what we don't like. It's critical. It's critical in a family. It's critical in a business. So we encouraged people to grieve, to talk about how they feel. And hopefully, when we trained our first line managers, our foremen, to be more compassionate and to understand why people need to grieve and to listen and to not make fun or disparage anybody who's grieving or complaining about a problem that they have, real or not real. And even to the point where all the employees had my personal phone number so they could call me. If they didn't get satisfaction, they could call me. And I got quite a few calls. And it's a wake up because you all of a sudden realize that they are human beings too. And if I was down there and I had that same problem, I would want to be able to talk to somebody about it. So that was a very important part of our thing. We recognized people as well. We did a lot of recognition, tremendous recognition, because that's self-actualization. Everybody wants to have the esteem of being recognized and being heard. But we also felt that if we really did care about our employees, that we would care about their health, their wellness and health. We worked a lot on health and wellness. And we came up with the Bar S Fit to Win program. And this program, an individual, along with some coaching, would set their personal health and wellness goals for themselves, whether it's losing weight, getting my blood pressure down, not being feeling so stressed, you know, so forth and so on. What kind of diet do I need? And they would set their own personal goals. And every year, we would have a Bar S Fit to Win Olympics at each location. And we would measure how many push-ups they can do, how many chin-ups, how fast they could run. But we'd also measure their numbers, you know, their blood pressure, their weight, cholesterol, so forth and so on. And rather than this being your typical Olympics where you compete with other people and you try to beat them and win, you didn't win that way. The way you won was beating yourself. So if you came up with numbers that were better than your numbers last year, that was a very positive thing. And the people that had the most improvement in those numbers, they would win the Olympics. And if they could win their local Olympics, and then they would be sent to the national Olympics. And again, their numbers would compete with all the other winners around the country. So it became, wasn't dog eat dog to beat your fellow worker. It was to beat yourself, to improve yourself. And that was very instrumental in people improving their self-love. You know, if you don't feel like good about yourself or how you're eating or sleeping or stress or how you look, it's hard to love yourself. If you believe you can change that in a relatively short period of time, your esteem goes way up. And it was kind of selfish in a way when we did this. You know, after all, competing in capitalism and our consumer world out there, it's very competitive. Every penny counts. Everything counts that you do. And your competition is striving day in and day out to beat you, to put you out of business. So a real edge we thought we could get was having a workforce that was mentally and physically fit. So and that paid off. I really think our medical, it showed up in our medical numbers. Or they went way down. Our absenteeism went way down. Productivity skyrocketed. We wound up with some of the best productivity numbers in the industry. Again, non-union. Mm-hmm. Non-union. This was all done now.
But that speaks to how caring and having compassion and understanding for your staff and the people who support you allows them to give back to you. And so it is that circular effect that occurs.
Absolutely.
You get what you give kind of thing.
You get what you give, and we got it back. And we you know, it wasn't easy. And some of the things that you hear, you don't want to hear. You don't want to hear some things but you got to hear them, and you got to do something about it. It's really, and this sounds kind of hokey. You wouldn't say this to meat cutters in the meat industry, but it's really all about love. It's all about love. So love expresses itself in so many different ways. It's about caring about people. When you care about them, they care about you. So,
100%.
Yeah.
So in those times when things were really busy or things didn't go as planned, how did you keep yourself committed to those 10 staple commitments? Because I know I hear a lot from individuals that I talk to in business, yeah, it's easy to be supportive and kind and caring and compassionate when things are going well. It's when everything folds in on you that I don't have the time for that. And so how did you continue to uphold that while you still had things that were challenging or not exactly easy, either in your personal life or in your business life?
Well, first of all, you have to rely on your culture, which we work real hard on. But you're right. The culture gets tested during times of stress. And we had those times. We had an occasion in the early 2000s. We had a listeria infestation in one of our plants. And that's a bacteria that's very hard to get rid of. And it showed up in one of our packages. And so we set out. First of all, we didn't know how pervasive it was. And we, make sure nobody got sick. And nobody ever got sick from this. But we recalled all the packages of meat that were made by this plant for the past 6 months. It was 14 million pounds of meat we brought back. And so it was a tremendous effort to do that, but it was also a major financial hit that we weren't sure we could survive. But we went to the employees, and because we didn't have any answers. Nobody in the industry, everybody, all meat companies were fighting this listeria problem. And so we went to the employees because they're the ones that really can make sure you're either clean or not clean in your plant. And we they all went to work. They participated in our teams to fight. We closed this plant to try to find the culprit, where it was coming from. And we found it. Found it was coming from a high-speed packaging machine, one of the uncleanable sections of that machine, very difficult to clean. And I don't know whether it was one employee or a group of employees that we figured out how to solve this. Wow. Tell us. And they said, we think you need to, you cook your hot dogs and your bacon and your ham to get rid of bacteria. That's why it's cooked. Well, you need to do that with the equipment. That's the only way to get it. You need to cook the equipment. So that kind of said, well, wow, we can't. There's the high technical electronics in these machines. How are we going to do this? Well, they figured out a way to do it. And sure enough, we shrouded every night. We would shroud the machinery, steam it to 140 degrees, I think it was, enough to kill the bacteria. And we never had a problem after that. I mean, so there's an example of facing what would seem an insurmountable problem, but with the culture created and the bond, the trust together, we went through this and we came out of that so much better as a company. First of all, the employees are extremely proud. They had all kinds of people from around the industry trying to find out how we did this. And they had so much self-esteem knowing that they came up with this. And families are like this and relationships are like this. They're going to be bumpy, right?
Yes.
Going to be bumpy. You're going to do something wrong, say something wrong. And how are you ever going to get around it? How do you ever patch it up? And you can only patch it up through the principles that I talked about. And self-love, self-esteem, caring about one another. I just wish we could apply this to the world. Think how great the world would be if everybody operated on these commitments and these, and we had our own set of commitments.
Yeah, but as you said, even in business, that seems to be true sometimes, where when you get hired on, you get a packet of information, and they tell you their mission, their vision, their values, their commitment. But then a year in, you find out that that was what was written on a piece of paper, and not necessarily what is in flow and in process every day.
Right.
So just like in a marriage or a relationship or a family or within business, what did you find, and in addition to culture, that really kept you, and I see you do this within the family and within the community as well, keeps you coming back to that baseline, keeps you coming back and reminding yourself of those principles, those commitments?
What keeps you coming back is self-love. If you know yourself, if you're true to yourself, like the name Suivera means, self-truth, mm-hmm. It forces you back to those things. You think about those things more often than not. If you hadn't internalized them and made a part of your individual culture. So that, I guess that's what keeps me coming back, is a desire to strengthen the bond. And because the stronger it is, the finest steel is forged in the hottest fire. So you're going to go through fires in your life. And this culture, this self-love, self-esteem is going to carry you through that. So I always try to, you have to keep it fresh, keep it new, keep it going forward. So,
yeah.
And I will say that the company, we sold the company 10 years ago, surprisingly, to a large Mexican firm. And when we did that, we had a number of bidders that were interested in buying our company because we were very successful.
So you went from not being able to sell it to having multiple suitors.
Right.
That's wonderful.
Multiple suitors. But one of the requirements that we had was not just pay the price and in cash, but is to how are you going to treat the employees? And we showed them the commitments we had with our employees and how we created this culture. And they bought into that, and they continued it after it was sold. And the company has gone on to flourish. It's really done well because because they bought into that. The new management, the new owners bought into that process. So it was, and it's so nice to know the good memories you have about, I don't remember this listeria that much, but I do remember the look on the employees' faces when we, for example, when we sold the company. They shared in the purchase price. Every employee got a piece of the purchase price. So they were rewarded for that too. So it was so meaningful to know that. Those are the very fond memories I have, and they carry me forward now. And I'm really indebted to those employees. I'm indebted to my co-managers, the people we founded the company with, especially the chairman, who has been such a friend of mine and so inspirational in my life. So I tried to apply this to my family. I've tried to apply it to companies that I volunteer, serve on boards with. I actually have had success at a medical university that I'm on the board, or was on the board. I'm emeritus now, but I was on the board, and I encouraged them in some of these cultural changes with their professorship and with their mainly student body about affirmations. In the medical world, it's so stressful.
Yeah.
It's so hard. I'm happy that I was able to make an impact there.
So tell us a little bit about your community commitment and how you have carried that heart leadership. You mentioned the board that you sat on with the medical community, but you've done a lot to impact the community overall. So how does this carry over? And how do you feel that being a heart leader, somebody who integrates heart with thought, has really been beneficial in that area?
It has, and it has carried over. And surprisingly, on different levels, you know, I one of the things I did was friends of mine that had young boys growing up or trying to decide what to do, they would always ask me, will you sit down with my son and give him some advice? And I did that on a number of occasions. And I just found out that one of the young men that I talked to about, this was a number of years ago, has gone on to be very successful in business and just sold his company for $1 billion.
Oh, wow.
Now, I don't know that he would attribute that to my counsel, but I feel like I was part of that. Part of that is giving back to individuals. Mm-hmm. And I've done that with my son, too. I mean, I tried to make him a reflection of that. And he succeeded every one of my expectations. So it's not just changing the world or changing the community. It's your friends and family, too, that you carry this on with. And when you're retired, you have more time to do this. I'm sure my son would tell you that. Probably has more time than he wanted. But it's paid off a great way there. It's also knowing that if no other reason than moral support, I've helped Sui Vera, your company. I have so much belief that you're going to change the world one soul at a time. And being part of that, even remotely, means a lot to me. It means a tremendous lot to me. And so I don't know how much I've given back, but I've tried to give back. And you always, that's all you can do is try. Mm-hmm. And so I'm involved right now with a medical research institute. And one of the things I'm working very hard there with is to looking at medicine from not just a pill and scalpel approach, but to look at it as a holistic approach, like Maslow's hierarchy of needs. I mean, we have needs that need to be filled lots of ways, and medical and disease, and that can be dealt with on so many levels, be that nutrition or meditation, stress management, exercise, all these things that are really under the control of the individual. It could change their life, change their world. So that's a very important way to give back, is to, if we could have the medical community thinking in terms of that integrated approach to healthcare, we would do wonders. And just in the area of nutrition, I try to give back to one another, because you're talking to the guy that sold 40 million hot dogs a week, right? And who now is vegan, and I'll celebrate my fourth year of being vegan this December. Yeah, plus. And it's changed my life a lot, tremendous improvement in my health. But just telling people about this, and you don't always hear what you don't always see the results of what you've done, at least not for a while sometimes. And some people I've talked to about my benefits, they've decided to try that for themselves. And some of their results are fantastic. So I feel that's part of giving back too. Giving back is spreading the word. know, I look at veganism as a three-legged stool for myself. One is obviously the nutrition and my own health. That's one leg of the stool. The other leg of the stool is those poor animals. You know, I was involved in that, not realizing what I was doing, not realizing that my dominion over animals caused them a lot of pain and suffering. So I would like to see that diminished, if not eliminated, and treat the pigs as well as we treat our pets and our, you know, and then the cows. And so that's another leg of the stool. And the third leg of the stool is our world. You know, I think reducing the agricultural farming, animal farming and meat production is a great contributor to the CO2 in the planet. And, you know, everybody's talking about all the things we can invent or do to fix that. Well, Monday morning, we all could decide to fix it. And it would be painful for the people in agriculture. They'd have to switch from raising cows to raising plants. But it could be done, and it could be done very quickly without a lot of investment. So that's the third leg of the stool. So that's part of giving back. And that was something I actually, frankly, have to thank you for, Amber. You were a very important part of that in my life. And I'm very appreciative, very grateful for that.
Thank you. I'm very grateful to see you flow through it and then share it with so many people. It really, it becomes a ripple effect. And part, again, of coming back to that heart leader is by embodying, as you said, that self-love and that knowing of who you are so that you always go back to your guiding principles and your core values, you do influence or show others what's possible. And that's what you did through Bar S, showing every one of those employees what was possible for them and then giving them the tools to do that so that it wasn't just talk, it was giving them the resources. And I've watched over these years that I've had the honor of knowing you, you continue that outside of what you did at Bar S. You continue to do that again and again in the community. You'll bring up through a reflection of who you are and then you give resources so that individuals can continue to internalize it for themselves and choose, is this my truth? Is this me or is it not? And you don't force it on people. You give them the opportunity to integrate it, to make their own conscious choice. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's one of the things that I've really loved being in witness of as I've gotten to know you. Because it's never force. It's always support. And it's helpful to see that reflection in somebody that I also witness so many people look up to and desire to emulate your behaviors. So how do you continue to do that over and over again and not lose yourself? How do you not allow that outside pressure to cause you to cave in? Are there any techniques or tools like meditation or mental frameworks or any tools that you could impart on individuals?
Well, the tools that I use, now that I'm retired, I'm 78 years old, and so I spend a lot of time on myself. I won't deny that. I have to work on my nutrition and how I eat. I have to work on my exercise. You have to do a lot more to keep the old body work going. So that's important. That keeps me keen. But really, the beauty of helping others and loving others is the love you get back. You know, I when I was a little boy, I got in trouble with the police, and the judge let me off on one condition that I didn't have my father had left the family that time. That I obtain a big brother through the Big Brothers organization. And that, it turns out that person was a minister, but he had a tremendous effect on me. He gave me part of himself. but it didn't take away from himself, because what he gave, he got back so much more in the years. And he saw what I became and what I did changed my life to the point where I remember when I was a young man, I joined the Big Brothers and I had little brothers. And so it's, you don't lose when you get, you don't lose this. When you give to others, you don't lose anything. You get back so much more than you sow. So I don't ever think about it as losing something or taking away from me. I always think it always enhances me. And I make a lot of mistakes too. And I'm not a saint. You know, I just have enough of that schooling in that area, that self-truth, enough of that. And you have to seek it out. You have to seek it out. You just can't, this isn't going to happen to you. You've got to talk to, like you, like Austin, you have to seek this truth out and try to follow people that you trust. And so I try to give back as much as I can. And hopefully, I wish I could be around 50 years from now to see what you've come up with, what you've done to the world. How did you change the world? And I know I would be very, very pleased. I know what will happen. So.
Thank you.
Yeah.
As we prepare to wrap up here, when it comes to your family and any individual who is working several hours right now to build a company or navigating through being a community contributor, and it's taking away from family time, are there any bits of advice that you could give from the heart around how to balance all of that, especially when it comes to the topic of gratitude? And I know, again, from experience, how grateful you are for your family and how much you love your wife, your son, and all of the members of your family, your primary family, your extended family. You even call me family, which is a wonderful blessing. So there's so much love and gratitude there. How do you allow yourself to not be so dissipated from everything else that you still have that space in your heart and soul to hold on to that as well?
Right. Well, when I was younger doing this, I probably didn't give as much as I should have to my family. I was working so many hours a week, and so it's very difficult. I won't say I have the solution for that. But I do know that the first place you have to look is within your own heart. You have to look in your heart and see, what are you really about? What is your long-term goal? Is it to make $1 zillion? Or is it to help your family get ahead? Or is it to help others? What's in your heart? You need to look there. And I never really thought about the heart much as that kind of an organ. I always worked on my mind, not realizing that the heart is every bit as powerful as the mind. And when I started to do that later in life, that's when I really understood some of the things I had to do to do this, to get through life and to be positive and to help others. It didn't always happen. That wasn't always the case. I was too busy worrying about money and getting ahead, building a business. And I did work with employees, but I didn't realize until a lot later that this not only applies to employees in the company, it applies to everybody you come in contact with. And I was able to start doing that in my middle age years. So I've had a couple, 3 decades of really working on this. So that's what I would tell somebody, is start thinking about what you are about. What are your commitments? What's your commitment? And what's your mission? What do you really want to be? And when they write your obit, what's said in there? And what do people really think about you? That's really what, because when you're gone, I mean, you have no chance to survive any of those. Those are all going to, if you don't leave those, they're going to all go away. And you will be forgotten. And at least I would want to have, so that my children and grandchildren have some good memory of me and some positive thing to say. And so I'm sure they all won't say it's that positive, but I think they probably will see some good in me that they will remember. So look into your own heart and see what's there. Spend a little time, a few minutes a day, just thinking about that. And I think you'll come away with, and read your book. I thought that was a great asset to me, reading your daily missives. And get help. Trust in people that you trust in, that you trust. Trust them to give you good advice.
I love that. And there you go. Love the tool of think about your own obituary. I actually have done that in my life, where I sat back and I wrote what I would desire my obituary to read.
So have I.
And then I'm like, okay, am I doing everything to have this be my actual obituary? And if I'm not, then what changes do I need to make? So I love that tool.
Exactly. It's a great tool. And you just can't give them the obituary. Yes. But if you write it down, what you want people to remember you as, you're going to think a lot about losing your temper.
Uh-huh.
And you're going to think a lot about being selfish. And you're going to think a lot about not going the extra mile for people. You will think about that.
Yes. So. Or otherwise, someone would read your obituary and go, oh, that's not true.
Yeah, we know better than that. Right.
So, yeah, it gives you something to look forward at and say, are my actions marrying up to what I would desire to have said? So I love that tool. Thank you for bringing that forward and sharing it.
And anybody can call me if they want. I'll give them more advice or have them call you. Life is not doing it all yourself. Not doing it all yourself.
Agreed.
And the more I let go of that, the better I am. It's hard for me because I like to control things, and I'm a control freak and type A. So it's hard to let go of some of those things, to let others be your guide, to let others help you, to follow others' advice. And so I'm trying to learn that, even in this late stage, still trying to learn that.
Yes. It is that we're independently dependent, as we say. We don't lose our identity by accepting help from others.
Oh, no.
But we learn from each other, because even as you described the love, it always comes back to you. Same with support and assistance. If you receive it, then you're in a much better place to give it when someone needs it from you. Right. So it creates that same.
But it's hard to give it if you don't love yourself.
Correct.
You've got to love yourself. You got to figure out and what you don't love about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That gives you the framework to what to work on. What don't you love about yourself?
Another great point. You have to be willing to look at the stuff that might not feel so fun.
Right.
It can't just be focused on the things that you're doing great. You have to be willing to look at the areas for improvement.
Right.
So, all of it. And since you made the kind offer, if anybody would like to get a hold of Bob, you can reach out to us at info@suivera.org. That is info@suivera, and that's S as in Sam, U I, V as in Victor, E R as in Richard, A.org. So info@suivera.org, and we will make sure to pass it along to Bob so that he can respond in kind. I want to take a moment to thank Bob once again for being here and sharing such amazing information and knowledge as a heart leader. And we also need to give a shout out to our amazing sponsor, Stephen Douglas. Stephen Douglas is one of the premier placement firms here in the United States. And we're going to make sure to have a lot of information on our site so that you can get a hold of them and learn a lot more about them. We also want to thank the Transformation Network for everything that they do to support us in bringing this podcast into life. Until next time, I'm Amber, your host with SWEVERA, and we look forward to seeing you in our SWEVERA community.
You've been listening to the Heart Leader Podcast with your host, Amber, where heart and mind align. Tune in weekly on TransformationTalkRadio.com as we take a deeper dive into what it means to be a heart leader. Ready to take the next step? Join us and over 1 million people worldwide who've united in creating this global movement of love. Become a heart leader for today and tomorrow. Learn more and connect with us at SWEVERA.org.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.